All right, it's time. Thank you guys for choosing to spend the final session with us talking about advanced OSD stuff. Scripts, web services, orchestrated runbooks, databases, stored procedures. In short, technologies we can use to customize our OSD environment. Now, I flip over to the slide. You notice the session code in the down left corner, DCB303. If you put a hashtag in front of that, well, you can send questions that way. We are monitoring that feed here on Twitter. So if you have questions throughout the session, feel free to keep them coming in. We might not be able to answer them all during the session, but we'll make sure to answer them, later on tonight. So hashtag DCB303 without the hash in the name. Now, rather than doing a boring presentation and say, I'm Johan, this is Michael, this is what we do, we have recorded a movie, film. So, this is what we do.
Explains it.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. All right. This session came about as originally a config manager session. But accidentally, everything we do in this session is applicable to both config manager and MDT 2012 LightTouch because they're using the same scripting engine, same development framework, same everything. So it doesn't matter what solution you use, you can still deal with this stuff. Just out of curiosity, how many are using Config Manager in this room? Almost all of you. Are anyone using LightTouch only? Well, a good few. Hands as well. All right. So, I mean, if you don't have Config Manager, it's obvious because why you should use LightTouch, because that's the only deployment solution available for Microsoft that actually is an enterprise-friendly, really good deployment solution. But when you use Config Manager, you actually have a choice. You can select to run Config Manager on its own, or you can select to add in components from MDT to Config Manager to get more functions related to OSD. MDT adds about, exactly 280 additional OSD features on top of Config Manager. It's very well tested, and it's supported by Microsoft. The only thing we really want you to consider before start writing your own scripts, start to develop things, download MDT and check if the stuff that you're trying to develop isn't already in there, because most likely it is. MDT is being used by some 600,000 people around the globe. It's not very likely that you will be the first to want to do something. Could be someone else has done that before you. So,
or as one of the customers asked me, why should I integrate? And I said, it's like buying a car, and the sales guy go and say, would you like to have some spare tires? And
Some
extra engine, some extra.
How do you put on a mic?
I don't know.
It's all...
What's wrong with mic?
It's supposed to point upwards.
Mic?
No, the mic.
Sorry. Anyway, it's like you have all these features, and then you say, no, I would like to manually create all the scripts because I have all the time in the world to do boring scripts. Who has that? Except us. You should absolutely integrate.
Yes. So MDT in its core, it's a solution that builds either on top of Config Manager and or on top of ADK or Windows Active Predecessor to ADK. But both of these solutions are, as I said, extremely enterprise-friendly. But let me highlight a few of the features that you actually get by integrated with MDT. So we'll log on to my magic Config Manager server.
Magic.
The first thing you start to realize when you do the integration is that when you pull up a sequence that has been created through that integration, it's a lot more actions than the default sequence. It's like times 7 in the number of actions. But with the sequence, you can actually deal with almost just a few sequences. Some companies, they only have one. Because with MDT, you can put the logic outside the sequence. Let me give you an example. For in the sequence, there will be an action that installs application. And in here, you can either go and hard code and select the app that you have in Config Manager, and you can create a static list in the sequence, or you can use an inner file or a database to store this list outside the sequence. Because again, the default behavior indeed is to use a list that comes from the outside rather than being hard-coded. And that can be an application list or it can be a packages list. It doesn't matter. But I can generate different lists. So I can have the accounting department, they have one list of applications. Marketing, they have another list of applications. Mike has a third list of applications. World of Tanks is in that list.
Absolutely.
And I can simply feed the list to the sequence. And that allows me to have a single sequence that will behave differently depending on which list I feed to it. So what MDT adds is dynamic deployment. And that, of course, goes for every single setting that you have in the sequence. Time zone, machine object, OU, domain to join, whatever. Computer names. Now, when you go add, you will see the MDT specific actions that you can add. And we are going to demonstrate a few of them for you here. But for example, we can kick off and run a PowerShell script directly from the sequence. It will call a built-in provider and run that script. Michael is going to demonstrate how we can call and execute orchestrated runbooks as part of our deployments. We can install roles and features. So if I need something on a client or a server, in this case, this is a Windows 8 sequence. So I will select Windows 8. And now I can go in and select to maybe have .NET Framework and whatever I would like to have on my Windows 8 image.
And those roles are also variables that you can add. So you can have a rule saying that if your location, for instance, is China, then you should absolutely have, I don't know, .NET framework or something like that. So you don't need to do that in the test sequence. It's convenient, but can be done outside.
All right. So all this ruling comes from a separate inner file, and Michael will have a session shortly where he will really dive into all the goodies that you can do with that inner file, but let me pull up one for you. This is a very simple inner file that will, well, do some configuration that the sequence then will use. The beauty of having the settings in a file like this is that we can simulate this. Like you can do with applications in Config Manager, you can simulate the deployment in 5 seconds flat and get the result. So you don't have to spend an hour just to realize, all right, crap, I got the wrong computer name, or it's supposed to be in the wrong OU. So if I go to the folder where I have the script and run the gather script, or rather, simply a batch file that runs the gather script, because I also delete the mini empty folder first. You didn't see the result. In this case, I have two sections. The priority line in the inner file tells you in what order, in what priority the sections are being read, not in what order they are listed in the file. So in this case, it will actually read TechDays first and then default. All right. So in this inner file, you can see I have conflicting record. I have a computer name and I have a computer name. Which computer name will be the result? 75. How many go for 75? Let's see. Here's 76. Because 76 came from Tech Days, which has a higher priority than default. And most of the properties are first writer wins. And Tech Days was read first. So with that logic, it should also be workstations too, right? Yes, it's workstations too. But it will be my happy scripts, where it will look for external scripts. So how come, I can prove it because it's my happy scripts here. How come it picked two values from here and one value from here? Well, it turns out there is an XML file that has a list of all the properties that you can use. And about 10 of them, or 9, have properties that can be overwritten, and deploy route is one of them. But most of the properties are properties that cannot be overwritten, and OSD computer name is one of them. But this file controls that behavior. But the simulation and dynamic deployment is superior when you try to do settings that a sequence will use later on. And this inner file cannot only be that inner file. I can add functions or calls in the inner file to reach out to other resources. And throughout this session, we are going to show you how you can work with both the standalone inner file, but also have it to reach out to other scripts, external scripts, to other web services, and to other databases, other SQL databases. Retrieve the information back and use that as part of your deployment. Really, really powerful stuff. And isn't it so, Michael, that you have prepared a few inner files?
Prepared? Okay, yeah, I prepared it. So just before we do that, if you do need to understand how this custom settings.ini file really works, there is obviously someone that created a blog post. I have about 450 readers per day for that post. So there's obviously people around the globe that like to know how custom-settings.ini works. So let's pick up some of these. Something that both Johan and I are constantly see is that we come to a customer and it goes like, oh, I couldn't reach you, so I created a script, okay? And the cool script reads the MAC address, okay? And then it creates the computer name based on that, okay? It took me 4 weeks to create it, okay? It's one line in custom-settings.ini. Oh, I didn't know that. No, because you couldn't reach me, and that's fine. So let's just see some of these, right? Let's say that we do need to configure something based on what? On a gateway, based on default gateway, and in combination with a laptop type, and desktop type, and virtual machine type. Now, all these names, default gateway is a reserved name. The other names are invented by me. They could also be called cucumber, tomato, or something else. It doesn't really matter.
It's just a name.
It's just a name. It has a corresponding setting. In this case, it says that OS install is equals to yes. It only applies to Light Touch. And the computer name is a combination of the percent name by type, percent, dash, and so on. And in the right corner, you can see that I'm actually using the serial number, but only a part of it. I'm using the 8 most left characters from the serial number. And then we combine everything, and then we got a computer name.
So we basically have the init file generating a computer name based on hardware information that is found from the machine when you start the deployment.
Yeah, in combination with the location and things like that. So let's run that. It's called test. That's not going to work. But if we do test dash any file, and then we do that. What about samples? Settings based on computer type and location. It should work. So we're going to run that. And if we check this file, you can see that the computer name is now WDT-NY- and then it's part of the serial number. So this is one way to create things. And what people don't seem to believe is that you can really read all this. So if we read this, we find out all these subsection, and it's picking up different names. Here's by name type, for instance. And that is then used in the next section as a variable.
Can you zoom in on the by laptop type, for example, and the is laptop later on?
Yeah, you mean like this?
Yes. For example, we're using, or Michael is using logic here to determine if it's a laptop or a desktop or a server, right? Or a laptop or a desktop. And that's a built-in function that checks the WMI for chassis type and selects the chassis, the type accordingly.
Yeah.
And what if I wanted to, for example, install a VPN client on only laptops? Or if I want to enable BitLocker only on laptops? Well, I can simply type in the app, in the laptop type section, I can do applications 001 equals and the name of the application in config manager, or the GUID of the application if you're using Light Touch, yeah, or the package name if I do packages 001 and the package ID in config manager and the program name in config manager. So I'm dynamically generating information in a simple text file that is being fed into the sequence and then used. Carry on.
For instance, if you're using UDI together with Configuration Manager, there you can manually configure many things in the task sequence, but do we really need to, would we really like to type in things like the password and things like that? Maybe, maybe not. Instead of doing that, we can pre-populate that information by using information. So in this case, if you go down to the site Stockholm, it's going to use the OSD local admin password of the Stockholm secret password. And the computer name is going to be based on the fact that it's from Stockholm, because it's going to be PC-STH-left 8 serial number characters and things like that. It's going to also be put in the right OU location. So instead of having multiple task sequences, well, you can have basically just one or maybe two, and then you use the custom settings.ini to dynamically populate that information for you.
We actually had a customer who spent almost 4 days writing scripts to deal with regional settings for Config Manager. Mm. So if you zoom in on the regional configuration again.
You mean the advanced stuff, like here's the gateway and here's where you put the user locale and keyboard locale?
Yeah, and time zone.
Yeah, and time zone, okay.
Which is more difficult? 4 lines of text or 4 days writing scripts? I would argue and say this is simpler.
Yeah, so the only reason we can find to actually do all these scripting is because you're a consultant and you charge by seconds or minutes or hours. And you charge very little, so you really need to spend a couple of weeks to create the script. However, if you want to do this really fast and make it easy, well, this is a better way to do that. So there's many things you can do with the custom settings.ini to fix things both in light touch and in zero touch. I would say almost half of all the problems and issues that customers have is fixable with a line of text in custom settings.ini.
But we'll come back to that ini file shortly or throughout the session. Because one way, as I said before, you can extend this is simply to have the ini file calling a database. And if you're using Config Manager, you're actually licensed to use the site server database to store the MDT database as well. It's called a sort of accompanying technology, or they had the name for it. So it's in the license papers, but you can actually use the full SQL server that you have for Config Manager as for the MDT database as well. And it absolutely makes sense to put them on the same instance because that's what you're licensed for. But even if you wouldn't be licensed or would be licensed to use it on any SQL, I would still recommend to put it on the same instance as your site server. The MDT database is a very, very small database. It's only being used to store deployment-related information. So even if you have tens of thousands of computers and you decide to store everything about them in this database, it's still a very small database. And it's only being used when you actually deploy something. So it will not kill your site server in no way. You can also, of course, run it on SQL Server Express, and that's what most light touch customers are doing. They don't purchase a full SQL server to manage a few hundred megs of database. They use SQL Express. And if I go over to my demo environment, it's really complicated to call a database. No, it's not. No. I would like to...
Another user?
Yes. I would like to log in as the network access account. The reason I'm doing this is because this is the account that Config Manager is using to access the database. And if I do my tests of this account, I will know that permissions and such works as well. If you're doing light touch deployments, you would log in with the account that you use to start the light touch deployments. But yes, a user account. If I go to my MDT folder, I have an ini file. In this ini file, Sumit is our friend, right? I've simply added 7 lines of text that instructs it to, in addition to the stuff I already have for generic settings, it should also go and query the database for more information.
There's only one small issue that happens when you do the database, especially when you work with a large enterprise. And they say that you cannot run the SQL database on your server. You need to run it in our hotel. And they go like, okay, I need a file share on that. And I go like, what? Yeah, I need a file share on your SQL Server database hotel. And I go like, no, you can't have that. In that case, I can't run on your database server. I need a file share.
The reason we need a file share is because when Config Manager or LightTouch starts the deployment, it will actually do a net use to that file share and then use that trusted connection to talk to the database. Because that's the only way we can have a trusted connection from WinPE, which is not a member of any domain, when we hit F12 and start the deployment. But this is quite simple. I specify the server name, specify the database name, the protocol, name pipes, the folder, and in this case, the table to connect to. And it's not a table, actually. It's a view, but it's treated like a table. This line here will create a connection string to the database, and it will construct a select query. So it will select star from computer table where MAC address, UID, etc. is what the machine is. Or it will pull the MAC address from the machine I'm deploying. So if I go back to my server and check in that database, I have actually added a machine. And as an identifier for this machine, I have said, use this MAC address to identify this machine. It could be a serial number, or most people use any of these, but you can use any of these four to identify that computer. And then you have all the OSD settings that you can have for this machine. And in this case, I have assigned a computer name for this computer. You can also create roles. And roles is just a group of settings, a list of settings. So I've created an accounting role, and I've added Config Manager 2012 applications. Because in here, I can select to either add LightTouch apps or Config Manager apps. But I selected to add Config Manager apps, Adobe Reader and Office, to this list of settings, to the accounting role. And in the details, I have also configured an OU to be used when you're part of accounting and an org name to be used when you're part of accounting. So it's just grouping settings together. And then I'll go back to my computer again, and I have connected this with one or more roles. So I'm linking this computer object to a role that contains additional settings. All right. So now if I go back to my client, I can run the simulation to see what would happen if I deploy this machine. It opened up SimTrace, and if I start from the beginning, it will read a bunch of stuff about the machine. For example, what IP addresses it has. And it will learn quite much about the hardware. The model, memory, it's a desktop apparently. It's not running on battery.
I noticed that it says property on the left side, right?
Yes.
Does that mean we can use those properties as properties, even if they are not documented?
Yes.
Yes. So if we would like to do a rule in custom-settings.ini based on if you're running on a battery or not, we could use the property is on battery and create a rule set based on that.
Everything that you see in this log file can be used as conditions, as settings, to determine settings on your machine. So you can select to abort deployment if the machine is running on battery. Or you can select to install something if it detects if it's a Hyper-V machine, whatever. Because there is a DLL file being used in WinPE that also will find out virtualization info that you can use as condition as well. So you can say, all right, it's apparently a Hyper-V machine. If it's a Hyper-V machine, I should also install the Hyper-V Integration Services application. All right.
Or if it's a VMware machine, then you should install the VMware integration.
Tools, yeah. Yes. So if I scroll down this log file, here you can see where it constructs the first SQL string. Select star from computer settings where? That was from my init file. and you can see it returned one record, and it actually read the computer name is now PC42. It read that from the database. Then it continued on and queried for, all right, this computer, does it have any roles? Yeah, apparently it had one role connected to it. It's accounting. Right. And then it continued and selected from role packages where accounting is something. And I actually had a few config manager packages. And I can do the same thing with applications, role applications. Record set 2, and it returned back that this sequence is supposed to have Adobe Reader in Office 2013. This is dynamic deployment, storing information outside the sequence, and the sequence, when you deploy it, will behave accordingly and install whatever apps you feed it with.
I do have a question for you, because this is a question that pops up from time to time.
Is it difficult?
No, it's not really difficult for us, but for many it is. Why should we have an extra database when we do Configuration Manager? Configuration Manager has already a database. Why should I have two?
Because this database, this MDT database, you can do anything with it. Create new tables, create new views, create stored procedures, do everything. Link into the Config Manager database to retrieve stuff. Shorthand story, you are allowed to customize it. Are you allowed to customize the Config Manager database? No.
Should you?
No.
No.
This is a way to do that. They're running on the same instance. It's so easy to create views and links to retrieve information that you can use. And speaking of that, that's exactly what you can do. Add your own tables, create stored procedures, extend and add stuff. You can simply create additional tables in the MDT database. And if you execute the stored procedure that will do a view refresh, it will actually, if I add or additional columns in the settings table, when I edit the machine again and go to details, they will be added automatically down here. Duh. You don't say anything.
No.
Let's try this again with image. In the MDT database, you can add, of course, additional tables and fields, columns, into one of the tables. And when you execute the stored procedure to refresh the view, this will also update the editor where you fill in that information. All right.
It's very nice to have this editor when you can edit in, right? Do you know anyone that has ever created kind of a PowerShell script to bulk update the MDT database or some BB script, something maybe? Do you think that will exist?
You have, I have, and about 10 people more have.
Yeah. So whenever you need to mass populate the MDT database, it's pretty easy to find, search for bulk script and MDT database, and you will find a bunch of different scripts. Pick one.
So
doesn't really matter which one.
To give you an example, it's quite common that people that has, especially a Windows Deployment Services background, they like to assign computer names based out of a prefix, if I can type correctly, plus a sequence number. And that we can use with the database as well. So we can use the database to keep track of sequence numbers for computer names that have been handed out. And to do this, I have a table. That is, if you edit this one, come on, it's coming.
I can tap dance if you want to.
But I would like to be able to sleep at night, so please, please don't.
And we might not destroy this.
So I have defined a prefix named PC, and I have defined a starting sequence number is 80. And have also added in a stored procedure that you can download from my blog if you'd like to have it. That stored procedure does two things. First, it will look into the database and see, is this machine that I'm trying to deploy already known? If it's already known, it will do nothing. because then it will use the computer name in the database. If there is no computer in the database, meaning the machine is unknown, it will actually create a new record. And it will use 5 digits, it will add the prefix in front of it, and it will crank it up by 1 for every computer that is being deployed. So, if I go back to my test environment, and select another inner file, and copy that to my MDT folder. This is the code required to call a stored procedure instead of querying a table. Not that difficult. You need to specify the name of the stored procedure, and in this case, I'm passing the MAC address to it. So if I run this script, I have the log file open. I will now be given a computer name. It's still PC42. Why is that? Exactly, it was known already in the database. All right, let me fix that. Go back to my database, and I will make it unknown. I will not delete it, but I will change the MAC address to something else. So now this is a different computer in the database. And then I go back to my client. I run the gather script again. You can see that the computer name is now PC81. It was the next available number in the database. If I go back to SQL, go back to the table again, try to select the right table, you can see it's now 81. So the next unknown computer will be PC82, 83, 84, 85, and so forth. But it also adding the machine into the database. So if I'm reinstalling this same machine again, it's now known, so it will use the same computer name. So now I can go back to my workbench. And, of course, I need to refresh the view. And you can press F5 like a million years. It will not happen anything at all. You actually need to go to the database node, hit refresh, go back to the computers, and now you have the two records. One record without the description, because I did not configure my stored procedure to also insert description. But that's something I could change and modify. If I go back to my stored procedure, you can see that previously I actually injected hardware information, make and model into the database, which is really useful if I have light touch deployments, because I don't have inventory in light touch. In Config Manager, I have, so I don't need them for Config Manager. And I can link that information in. But now it actually added a machine. If I go to the details, it will have that computer name, PC81. And again, the next one will be 82 and 83 and so forth. Then?
Well, that's nice, but sometimes we need information that the gather process doesn't collect for us, right? So we might need the fan speed of the CPU. Why do we need that? I don't know. I have customers asking me for all kinds of crazy things. We need this and we need this. And one of the things that they most often need is a generalization of the computer name or the make and model. So for instance, HP has a bunch of names for HP. It's called Hewlett Packard, it's HP. Dell, I think they have like 3. And if you pick up any laptop from HP, you're going to see it has a very nice name. It's a whatever 8240 parenthesis, hash, and some bunch of numbers. And then you have 10 of these, and they are the same with different numbers. So it's different makes and models. And I go like, please, can't you just, you know...
Can't we use wildcards?
Yeah, the thing is that when you do light touch, it's possible to fix, but still it's going to end up in different databases. So it would be nice to have it as a standard name. And that we can do by using something called a user exit script. So we extend the gather process by writing a VB script that gets out, runs the code, gets back, and provide that information back to us. So if you could press number 4 on that.
I can't do that because the slide still says, it's not a demo slide, so I need to flip, and then we can.
Now, please, thank you. So, great. So this is a custom settings.ini. You can see I have a priority called hardware. We also have make alias, model alias, SM BIOS, BIOS version, default, and set OSD. So there's a bunch of different settings. We also added a bunch of new properties. So model alias, make alias, and things like that. They are not in there by default, so we need to add them. If you check the section called hardware info, it starts with a user exit. And the user exit means bail out and run this script. In this script, you should search for the following functions. The function called make alias.
No, the function is set make alias.
Yeah, model alias and SM BIOS. The last thing is the function, and the value that gets returned from the user exit is going to be populated in the variable that we have called make alias or the property. So if we do an escape on that and we check how the script looks like, it's not that hard. What we do is that we have all these functions here, right? It's doing a bit of logging, and then it's using VBScript to, in this case, use a select case based on the make that we got from the machine. And they say if the name is Dell Computer Corporation, Dell Inc. dot Dell Computer Corp. dot, then it's actually a Dell. And so on, and so on.
So we use this to normalize information that we get from the deployment, from the hardware info.
And we have more things. Here's the nice thing. When you do deployment for virtual machines, it's very nice to do Hyper-V. If you ask the make and model, it's going to return the value of the manufacturer is Microsoft. Okay, thanks. And the model is virtual machine. Okay. What version of the hypervisor are you running? It's virtual machine. Okay. But that doesn't really help us in all the cases. Sometimes we really need to know what kind of hypervisor we have. So if you check here, we start asking for the BIOS version, because that's the only way to actually figure out how it works. Now, the latest version of AMD 2012 and Update 1 covers most of these, but they don't cover the latest version that doesn't exist yet. So sometimes you really need to have this anyway. So this is a way of fixing that. And if you run it, it looks like this.
We simply use it to normalize values.
Yeah, so let's run this and see what happens. You're going to see it's going to jump out and run the user exit script. It says here.
You don't like same trace, do you?
No, not on this machine because I never installed it. Here yes. You can see that it's called successfully, and based on all the values it's returning, it's then going to search for, in this case, the version of the BIOS. So, as you can see, it returns the value of the BIOS and then defines that the following application should be installed. So, user exit is a very nice way of getting information from the local machine. So, the the question that pops up, can I use a user exit script to connect to Active Directory? Yeah, you could, but you should never. User exit script is for getting information from the local machine and turn it into a property so it can be used in all sequences and in all rule sets at a later time. Instead of creating a script for each of these functions, you create one user exit script, get it information, turn it into property, and then you use it.
So we use simply user exits to extend Config Manager and extend LightTouch with additional properties that we then can use as part of our deployments. For example, Micah didn't show you, but his script he had, for example, if it detects it's a Lenovo machine, it will not use the model name from Lenovo. It will instead query the product version from Lenovo's, so it will retrieve ThinkPad T420 instead of a 7-digit number. And the same thing for Panasonic, the same thing for HP and Dell. We put logic in the script that knows additional intelligence or intelligence about the machines. Now, if you want to go a bit more advanced, you can download Visual Studio. You can do the Express version, or you can get the full version if you have the cash. But with that, the other version is free. You can actually create code that you run on the server side that appears to be either a database or a user exit script, but it's the code that does something on the server side. And MDT actually, and Config Manager, talks to web services natively. So,
And that is the correct way to query Active Directory. So user exits is local, and web services is when you do want to retrieve information as a part of the deployment on an external source.
So here I have created a web service with 11, 12 methods or something. For example, there is one method that is reaching out into the database and give me a list of reaching in into Active Directory. Well, it is a database, to give me a list of the OUs that I have in Active Directory. There is another one that will reach into the MDT database and give me a list of roles available. And there is a third one that actually reaches out into Config Manager and gives me a list. It's actually not sequences, but I call it sequences. It's a list of all collections that have a required deployment of a sequence to them. This is more or less impossible to do on a script that is client-side in WinP. But this is web services that I add to the web server on the server. It's managed code, it's secure. I have, if I look into, I can show you that information.
Things like permissions and other security-related items?
Yes. Using a separate application pool for this web service, and I also have a dedicated service account that is being used to run this web service. This information is server-side only, so you don't have to worry about the clear text password here. I also try to store a lot of the configuration about the web services outside the compiled code so that it can easily be changed between different environments. But if I click on one of these web services, for example, the OU list, it will give me, well, a list of OUs back from Active Directory. From the client side, I go back to my demo environment, close this one. I have my init file. It's really difficult to call a web service because you need to specify the name to it. And if you want to send something to it, you need to specify that as well. But again, I'm just changing small, small stuff in an init file, and now it's actually doing stuff. So if I run this, wow, that's a new command. I've actually taken the LightTouch wizard, combined 5 panes into 1 pane, but it's for Config Manager. So as you can see, it found out that the computer name was this. It didn't have a description because, again, I didn't add a description. I can now select the roles from the database. I can change the computer name if I like to something else. I can select an OU in Active Directory. This is real-time info from AD. It's the web service that reads that information and pull it back to the client. So I can select an OU. And I can select an OS image. And when I click finish here, what will happen is it will call another web service that is named add machine to collection. And we'll put this object as a direct member into that collection, to which I have a required deployment of that sequence. And then the machine will be deployed in that way. Doing this without web services is an absolute nightmare. And don't be too afraid of doing some coding. You can go to CodePlex and download source code for these web services. Search my name or search for MDT, you'll find it. Each function is about 20 to 30 lines of code. So even if you haven't done any development at all in your life, it's not that difficult to take this chunk of snippet of code and change it to whatever you like. If you look on the OU list, for example, I'm connecting into Active Directory, and eventually I get some result back, and I create an XML object, and I return the object, well, to the client. You can change and modify this, and the only thing you need to do is to compile the DLL again, add it back to the server, change your INI file, and life is good. This can also be used if you have a really wide distributed environment, where, I mean, the database that I use is using named pipes, which works really great if you have a good WAN connection. But if you have latencies that goes over like 700 milliseconds, or if you have really congested network lines, that will fail. And those of you who are database savvy, you know that you can increase the connection time. Will it help? No. You're toast if you have a poor WAN link to do named pipes calls. Instead, you can have WinPE call a web service using HTTP, very resilient against a bad network. The web service talks to the database, gets some value back, and give it back to the client. So you can have an extremely poor network link. You can have a branch office in Shanghai over a satellite link. And you can still do OSD, because it will just create a web service and get the settings back, and those settings will be used from the deployment. It will still get the sequence from the management point, but it will get the settings from the web service, which, well, the management point is that, anyway, but it will retrieve all the packages from the closest DP. And speaking of web services, didn't you have a few more web services? But with a different name.
Yes. So, but before we just dig into that, one other thing you can do use web services for is if you have an asset management system and all the information for the computers are in that system today, if you can add e-web services to it, then you can use that as the MDT database by retrieving the information from that location. If possible. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Now, web services is nice, and as Johan showed you, you need to start up something called Visual Studio. How many of you are scared of Visual Studio? I am. I'm not a dev guy, I've never been, and I will never be, but I need to play with it anyway.
It's fun.
Yeah, I know. After a while. What you can do is that you can use something called Orchestrator. So System Center 2012 has a part called Orchestrator. So raise your hand if you are currently using Orchestrator in your environment. Some of you are.
A few of you.
That's good.
The reason we do this is because we have really strong headlights.
So yeah. This is like driving on the wrong side of the Autobahn in Germany. It's really bad. Now, if you do have Orchestrator in place, that's fine. You should absolutely start using it. If you don't have Orchestrator, that's going to be your number one wish. Please put up the Orchestrator server as soon as possible. Because Orchestrator can do pretty much the same as web services can do without any coding at all. It's like playing with Lego.
So you mean if you have Orchestrator, even you could develop web services?
Absolutely. Because it's drag and drop and click, and I can do that.
All right.
Flip over.
No, now I can flip over.
Ah, now you can flip over. So let's do a crash course in Orchestrator. This is the super fast crash course. Orchestrator runs on a Windows server, preferable Windows Server 2012, but it works on other two. It needs port 8182 open. It needs a database. It needs to have a SQL server. It takes about 40 minutes to install it from scratch, and then you're done, and there's nothing else to it.
And yes, when you get the System Center license, you also get the license for SQL to run this. So
yes.
Don't worry about that.
No, and everybody has some, there usually is questions around the, we only have the Configuration Manager client suite. We only have the client side. Can we use it for step up and ask us afterwards? We have all the gray areas covered on how to do that. It's not that hard. The first thing you do is you start up something called the Deployment Manager. The Deployment Manager is where you integrate Orchestrator with other integration packs. So in this case, I downloaded the System Center Integration Pack for Active Directory and for System Center 2012 Service Pack 1. So you download them. They are on pinpoint. It doesn't cost anything. It takes a couple of minutes. All this is like 9 megs. So it takes like 1.5 minutes to download it. When you have downloaded them, you do a register, you point to the folder, you do next, 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 and when you're done with that, you right-click on anything and you say deploy IP to Runbook server, you specify them, and then you specify the server, and then it takes about 2 minutes, and then you have them installed.
So integration pack is used to add more functions into Orchestrator.
Yes. So what you get is new activities. So on the right side, you can see all the activities I have. For instance, here's the Twitter. Yes, Orchestrator can do Twitter. Why would you do Twitter? Well, we use Twitter internally. That is how we notify the internal IT staff that a machine has been deployed. They go through a Twitter channel. We also have some emergency alarm system going, actually, through Twitter, because it's very cheap and everybody has access to it. And there's no security risk anyway, it's just bogus information. So you can do that. You can also do Active Directory, like moving machines. You have Configuration Manager, you have Operation Manager, you have all kinds of activities. Now, this is how we do it to make a really fast runbook. Let's assume I would like to, no, let's do runbook instead. I want to move a file. Text file management. Append line, delete file, no, that's utilities. Here's utilities. Let's see if we can find a utility that, file management, here it goes. Monitor file. I'm going to grab a monitor file, and then I'm going to grab a move file. And I do click them and connect them together, like this. And in monitor file, I specify in a folder. So let's go to E colon. Let's go to any folder. Computer, E colon. There's a folder.
Demo?
Yep, it's going to be demo. And it's going to be another folder called Demo 2. So I'm going to monitor the folder called Demo. There's Demo. And I would like it to monitor all the files. This has a file name that matches the pattern of TXT. No, that's good enough. And I would like to move any text file from the one folder to another folder, which is kind of easy because you can do that with script. Now the source file, here's when Orchestrator becomes funny. You shouldn't type in anything. You should right-click and say subscribe, publish data, because everything that is picked up by the first activity becomes variables in the next activity, and in the next, and in the next. So it's collecting all items as variables as it goes forward. So in this case, I'm just going to pick the name and path, because I don't know the name and path of the file at the moment. And then I'm going to store it in another location. That's a runbook. And you're done. Now, how do you test this? Well, there's a runbook tester over here. You fire it up, you press run, and it starts the activity. Now it's waiting for a text file to show up. And with a bit of luck, we need to have a text file. And we need to do like this, because it's a very secure system. Yeah, that's Notepad on steroids. So let's copy that folder, the file, to the demo folder. And it shows up in that folder. That's nice. And within a couple of seconds, the runbook will realize that, hey, there's a file there, and I'm going to move the file. You can see the details about... it failed to start. What did I do now?
What about permissions?
Nah, it shouldn't be a problem. Maybe I need to change the permissions on the folders. Just to be sure. I can't remember if I changed it or not. I didn't do that. I'm a bad boy.
And if you actually speak up, I think they can hear you beyond line
one. I'm not sure. I'm just going to change the permissions like this. Hopefully it will work now. Runbook tester, run. Go ahead, failed. Reason, invalid input parameters. That's incorrect. You should never do this live. You should always prepare, and I didn't do that. I'm lousy. And they are correct. Oh, I forgot about triggers. There are no triggers around here. Now we only need that. So, let's try it again. Run. It's running, it's searching for a file. Oh my God, it's going to find a file, and it's going to move the file. However, it's going to take a couple of seconds. So before, it's going to take a couple of seconds, and while we are waiting on that, let's go back to what MDT has to offer. So one thing that these task sequence we have today has to offer is the actual integration of eRunbook. So from the task sequence, not from custom-settings.ini, but from the task sequence, you can execute runbooks. And this is the beauty. So if I flip back, and hopefully that machine is done. Ah, oh, it's not. Oh, I'm going to fix that. So, yeah, I know. It's already created. So I need to copy the file out back and forth. But we don't really have time for that. So let's check this runbook. And if we do have time, I can go back. In this case, we have a runbook called Move Computer to Stage OU. And I need to open the toolbox with sysinternals to fire up Sumit so you can see. There you go. It says initialize data. That is the data that comes from the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, from the task sequences. We send that data into a get computer to find a computer. And when we find a computer, we move the computer to another location. In this case, the initialized data only have the following simple properties, like OSD computer name and staging OU. In the get computer, we have the configuration connector to Active Directory. It needs to have an account that can connect to Active Directory to read Active Directory. However, when you do the Active Directory parameter connection, it's like, how do I filter on that computer name specifically? And you try to do optional properties and go like, no, has nothing to do with that. You do filters, and the easiest way to filter on this is the SAM account name. So you do SAM account name equals the OSD computer name. And that doesn't work. But if you add the dollar sign in the end, it does. Because that's the SAM account computer name, right?
Of course.
Of course. So that will return the computer. Now, when I have the computer, then I can move the computer. So the next step will be move computer, properties, and here I have the same connector and the computer distinguished name by magic comes from the get computer, and there I have the distinguished name. So when you do create runbooks, basically every time you need to have initialized data, this is the data I accept as input data, then you need to use the get. It's pretty much like PowerShell. You need to have it as an object because all the move and set and change are based on distinguished name or object OU or object name or whatever it is. So you always need to do a get and then to modify the information. Now, to make sure it doesn't try to move anything strange, the little arrow actually has conditions. In this case, the condition is only continue to move the computer when the count is 1. It makes sense. If it returns 2, you have a really bad Active Directory. There's something wrong somewhere. If it returns 0, it's fine. And you should absolutely continue. I mean, you should add things like logging. I didn't do this. I want to show you as the core functionality. And here we have another runbooks that do the opposite thing. It moves from the whatever location it is to the original location where the machine should be. That means that we could, in a task sequence now, before we do a refresh, before we do a whatever we want to do with that machine, make sure that that machine account is in this organizational unit before we try to do anything, and then when it's done, it's moved here. So how do you run those things? Well, number one is you need to check them in, and you can see they are checked in. And from MDT, and I'm only using MDT for one simple reason. It's the easiest and fastest way to test and run e-task sequence. It's going to work the same way in Config Manager, so there's no different at all. So in this case, we need to move the machine to a computer to the staging OU. So if I go into the task sequence, we do a gather step, and then I set the task sequence variable. This is the location where the machine should end up when we do the deployment. And after that, I do the runbook. And if you check here, it says automatically provide runbook parameter values. It does that because the values we have here are OSD computer name, OSD computer name and staging OU. And as long as you're using the same name in custom settings.ini or predefined words, you can use this. However, if you use another word because you didn't like to use OSD computer name, you used computer name, then you need to map the name. There's a wait for the runbook to finish before continuing. Most of the times that should be selected. However, if you create a runbook for cleaning up, this is one of the runbooks that I actually use from time to time. When you do a replace of a machine, when you do a replace on the machine, that machine should be destroyed, right? Clean up Active Directory, remove all the agents, remove it from all the kinds of stuff that we have in our environment. Delete it from the asset management database or update it in the asset management database. In that case, there's no need for waiting. It's going to be in a process that ends, and you don't need to have return values from it. So how do you try these out? Well, number one is, of course, make sure that you do have a computer that has a name so you can move it. Don't try to do this with the domain controllers. That's a bad thing to do. Make sure you have it at an OU where you can put the machine in. So we do have that. And then we run. And in this case, I need to specify OSD computer name, colon, PC008.
The key here is when you have it in the inner file, it's the property equals the value. When you do it command line, it's the property with the dash or slash and then colon and the value.
Yeah. So let's run that. So move computer to staging OU, do next. I need to have a password. And I need to check what keyboard I have today. I have a US keyboard. And now it's executing the runbook. And if we go in here, we should see this machine is actually moved over here. And as magic occurs, it happens. So now we can see here, for instance, in the log file that the machine was moved to the right location. So this is one way of extending things, using orchestrator runbooks to create all the those things you would like to do. We have a bunch of different things you can do, and I'm constantly publishing them on my blog.
So this is just the way to call out Orchestrator to do something for us, and then returning back to our normal deployment. It's extremely powerful, and once you try to create all these runbooks, you never want to stop.
My life is a runbook.
So, there are some resources available for you guys out there. Our blogs and this deploymentartist.com website has links to all the resources we use to find more information about deployments. Our own blogs, Deployment Bunny and Deployment Research. There are books, trainings, videos you can find to learn more about deployment. And we were told to not forget to remind you to fill in the evals from this session for the terminals or for your phones or whatever you do. And as always, be honest but gentle. And thank you for taking your time.
Thank you so much for coming.